Welcome to the Lancet Respiratory Medicine podcast. I'm Diana Stanley, Deputy Editor of the Lancet Respiratory Medicine, and today I'll be talking to Dr. Yves Lacasse from the University Institute of Cardiology and Pulmonology of Quebec. Today, Dr. Lacasse will be joining us to talk about the use of home oxygen for COPD, as he is an author on a recent paper published in the Lancet Respiratory Medicine on this topic. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Lacasse. Could you begin by giving us some background on the use of home oxygen for COPD?
First of all, I would like to thank the journal for this opportunity to further discuss about the background and the results of our systematic review and meta-analysis of home oxygen in COPD patients with moderate hypoxemia. Two landmark trials conducted more than 30 years ago provided scientific evidence that under very specific circumstances, long-term oxygen therapy may prolong life. These two trials targeted patients with COPD and severe daytime hypoxemia. The first randomized trial to be published in 1980 was the American Nocturnal Oxygen Therapy Trial that assigned 203 patients to receive either nocturnal oxygen or continuous oxygen. The continuous oxygen group actually received oxygen for an average of 18 hours a day. At 24 months, the overall mortality in the continuous group was 22%, whereas it was 40% in the nocturnal group, an absolute difference of 18%. This difference corresponds to a number needed to treat of 6, which means that 6 patients must receive oxygen during 5 years in order to prevent one death over the same period. In the British Medical Research Council's trial published in 1981, home oxygen prescribed for 15 hours per day was compared to no oxygen at all in patients with severe hypoxemia and at least one episode of heart failure with ankle edema. 87 patients were randomized. Overall, at 5-year follow-up, those who received oxygen had an improved survival. 42% had died compared to 66% of those in the control group. This 24% difference corresponds to a number needed to treat of 5. It is therefore interesting to note that the scientific foundation of home oxygen therapy to treat severe hypoxemia in COPD is from a total of only 290 patients. The good news from both trials was that oxygen saves lives. From this moment, oxygen therapy became a standard of care. Oxygen therapy then gained widespread acceptance by official organizations for the treatment of most cardiopulmonary conditions complicated by severe hypoxemia, even if proof of efficacy was lacking. These conditions now largely go beyond COPD and include, among others, cystic fibrosis, interstitial lung diseases, and pulmonary arterial hypertension. New potential indications of oxygen therapy in COPD have also emerged. The perceived indications of oxygen therapy in COPD have expanded to include nocturnal oxygen therapy in patients with isolated nocturnal oxygen desaturation, ambulatory oxygen to correct exercise-induced desaturation, and home oxygen for moderate hypoxemia. The consequence is that even in COPD, oxygen utilization is now widespread, even if it is not always supported by scientific evidence. For instance, in my own institution, before we launched the International Nocturnal Oxygen Trial, 20% of patients with a diagnosis of COPD who were receiving home oxygen through our respiratory home care program were only receiving oxygen during sleep. Similarly, the fraction of oxygen prescriptions that applied to patients with moderate hypoxemia was 41% in the National Emphysema Treatment Trial. It was 68% in the COPD genes study.
How did you decide on this particular piece of research?
Our primary objective was to determine in COPD with moderate hypoxemia, the effect of long-term oxygen therapy and nocturnal oxygen therapy on the primary outcome of mortality. We thought that a systematic review of the literature was clearly needed for the following reason. The most recent trials of long-term oxygen therapy in patients with moderate daytime hypoxemia and of nocturnal oxygen therapy in patients with isolated nocturnal desaturation failed to demonstrate survival benefit of supplemental oxygen. Both the long-term oxygen therapy trial, or the LOT, and the International Nocturnal Oxygen Trial, or the INOX trial, examined the effect of oxygen on a primary composite outcome: death or first hospitalization in the LOT, and death or progression to long-term oxygen therapy in the INOX trial. The two trials lacked power to assess the effect of oxygen on the separate outcome of mortality. We published in 2020 a preliminary version of this meta-analysis along with our main report of the INOX trial. At that time, we had considered only the intervention of nocturnal oxygen. We decided to complement this meta-analysis by considering not only the intervention of nocturnal oxygen, but also that of long-term oxygen therapy. The rationale behind our decision to consider altogether nocturnal desaturation and moderate daytime hypoxemia is from observations made in the LOT and the INOX trial. At baseline, patients in both studies had similar baseline characteristics and daytime oxygen saturation. 3-year mortality rates were also similar in both trials, around 18 to 20%. Moderate daytime hypoxemia is also a strong predictor of nocturnal desaturation. Therefore, these two populations overlap to a very large extent and may be considered as a whole as having moderate hypoxemia.
Thank you for that nice summary of the background and aims of the study. Could you give us a brief description of the key findings of your research?
6 randomized trials published between 1992 and 2020 were included in this meta-analysis. From these 6 trials, 5 contributed to the primary analysis of mortality with a total of 1,002 patients. We found no indication that long-term oxygen or nocturnal oxygen have a positive or negative impact on survival after 3 years of intervention. The quality of evidence was high and the trial results were homogeneous. Our interpretation of the primary meta-analysis of mortality is from the relationship between the estimate of the treatment effect with its 95% confidence interval and the estimate of the minimal clinically important difference. In this analysis, the lower limit of the confidence interval corresponds to a relative risk reduction in mortality of 28%, which is short of the pre-specified minimal clinically important difference of 30 to 40%. This estimate of the minimal clinically important difference arose independently from the LOT and the INOX trial. In the LOT, the minimal clinically important difference was determined from the judgment of the investigators, who selected a relative risk reduction of 40% as the minimal clinically important difference, because supplemental oxygen is expensive and its use is burdensome. In the INOX trial, the minimal clinically important difference, that is a relative risk reduction of 30%, was thoroughly determined from a national survey of Canadian pulmonologists conducted prior to the trial. We acknowledge, however, that uncertainty exists in the judgment of the minimal clinically important difference. Clinicians and patients may well consider that the minimal clinically important difference is less than a relative risk reduction of 30 to 40%. We acknowledge, however, that uncertainty exists in the judgment of the minimal clinically important difference. Clinicians and patients may well consider that the minimal clinically important difference is less than a relative risk reduction of 30%, with the consequence that treatment effect may overlap the minimal clinically important difference. This situation would only downgrade the quality of evidence that we found in our meta-analysis from high to moderate because of imprecision. In this case, a more conservative interpretation of our results would be that supplemental oxygen probably makes little or no difference in three-year mortality in patients with COPD and moderate hypoxemia. Also, our secondary analysis demonstrated that oxygen has probably little or no effect on exacerbation and hospitalization rates, quality of life, and in the case of nocturnal oxygen therapy, progression to long-term oxygen therapy. These findings clearly represent, in our opinion, arguments against the widespread recommendation of home oxygen in this population.
Do you think home oxygen still has a role in some groups of patients with moderate hypoxemia?
A subgroup of patients was not well represented in the trials that met the inclusion criteria of our review. These are patients with moderate hypoxemia complicated by end organ dysfunction. Clinically significant pulmonary hypertension and polycythemia are rare phenomena in COPD patients and moderate hypoxemia, but they do exist. These patients have not adapted well to chronic hypoxemia, even if it is moderate, and may have a poor prognosis. I would therefore consider prescribing supplemental oxygen in these circumstances, despite the general conclusion of our systematic review.
What further research do you think is needed in the future?
The effect of home oxygen for moderate hypoxemia on exercise tolerance, dyspnea, and quality of life have not been well studied. However, home oxygen is expensive and extremely inconvenient. Our systematic review and meta-analysis demonstrated that home oxygen has little or no significant effect on the important outcomes of mortality, hospitalization rates, and exacerbation rates. Consequently, I would certainly not consider running a long-term trial of home oxygen with exercise tolerance, dyspnea, and quality of life as primary outcomes, especially since effective alternatives to improve these outcomes are available. However, I think that we need to better define the real indications of home oxygen, whatever the level of hypoxemia. Single measures of partial pressure in oxygen in arterial blood or oxygen saturation by pulse oximetry that have been used for years as the primary indicators for hypoxemia might not be the most appropriate methods to prescribe home oxygen. These measures are static and instantaneous and may not reflect patients' long-term oxygenation status and do not necessarily represent the real condition of our patients. A better approach to prescribe oxygen could be to view chronic hypoxemia and its consequences as a continuum. On one hand, patients may adapt well to chronic hypoxemia without developing end organ dysfunctions. These patients may not respond to oxygen therapy. On the other hand, other patients may not well adapt to chronic hypoxemia and develop early end organ dysfunction in the course of their disease. The problem is in our current definition of end organ dysfunction. Clinically significant pulmonary hypertension and polycythemia certainly indicate end organ dysfunction, but they represent late and severe consequences of chronic hypoxemia. What we need is to identify other determinants of the response to home oxygen. Chronic hypercapnia may represent one of them. It is interesting to note that in the British Medical Research Council trial, patients were mostly hypercapnic at study entry. In the American Nocturnal Oxygen Therapy trial, mean PCO2 at study entry was normal. In this trial, a subgroup analysis indicated that those with hypercapnia responded to oxygen therapy and had a survival benefit from treatment, whereas those with normal capnia did not respond to therapy and had no survival benefit from treatment. Also, other biomarkers to predict outcomes in patients with chronic hypoxemia would be useful to decide whether home oxygen is truly indicated. For instance, microalbuminuria is frequent in COPD. At least one study had suggested that it is associated with hypoxemia early in the course of the disease and may indicate increased cardiovascular risk. Given the inconvenience of home oxygen therapy, I hope that we will be heading toward personalized medicine or precision medicine in the near future, so that only those most likely to benefit from oxygen will receive it. Given the inconvenience of home oxygen therapy, I hope that we will be heading toward personalized medicine or precision medicine in the near future, so that only those most likely to benefit from oxygen will receive it.
You can read Dr. Lacasse's research online now at thelancet.com. Thank you to Dr. Lacasse for talking to us today, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Lancet Respiratory Medicine podcast. You can subscribe to Conversation with the Lancet Respiratory Medicine wherever you usually get your podcasts.